Bruce, how you doing?
Well, I was going to be on with Dave, and then I got home from the Habs series for like 2 days, and there was a ton of plants that needed to be, you know, put into the garden bed and all this stuff. And so my phone was still on silent, I think, from the news conferences last night. And as a result, I missed the calls as I was gardening.
What were you planting in your garden?
I got to be honest, my wife bought the plants. So they're lovely. Mm-hmm. Some are green fuzzy ones, some are taller ones, some are shorter ones, but there's just a lot of them.
Yeah, you're just the guy digging the hole, basically.
That's basically all I'm hey, equipped to do, yes.
Perfect. I did that. Grew up doing that every year with my mother. I would just be the grunt work, do the hard labor, and she would pick out where it goes. So I totally understand. It's great. As long as you got some peas and carrots put in, money.
Yeah, well, we usually do that out of the cottage.
Okay.
Because in here, the squirrels will get them in about 5 or 6 seconds.
Oh, geez. Nice. Speaking of the Habs, mm-hmm. obviously a huge blow without Carey Price. I'm not sure even if Carey Price is in goal last night, it would matter that much, because if they can't score more than one goal on Henrik Lundqvist, they're not going to win.
Well, and that was part of the thing. Is last night, this poor kid, Dustin Tokarski, who's been in big games, who's won the Mem Cup, who's won the World Juniors, he's won everywhere he's gone. And he was put into the situation in the Bell Center with this incredible arena and a pretty good Rangers team. And really last night, the only thing you could say about the kid is that he's not Henrik Lundqvist, which, you know what? Have you ever taken a close look at Henrik Lundqvist? Nobody really is. The guy looks like an aristocrat. And last night, the first goal, he had no chance. It was a point shot that deflected off a defenseman's hip. The third goal, Marty St. Louis labeled it from the slot through a screen, like no goalie in the world stops that, I really don't think. And the second goal you can quarrel with. But again, as you pointed out, they only score once in Henrik Lundqvist despite getting 41 shots on goal. And what they were saying after the game to me was interesting. Is if you watched the game, you watched a team that came out so hard. And really, Montreal in the second period of game one and the first period of game two was by far the better team and just pushed the Rangers. Same way the Rangers were in the first period of game one, skating in only one direction. And they had chance after chance after chance after chance. And they came out of the first period down 2-1. And then you saw the second period. You could see the belief start to leak out of the building and almost leak out of the team almost, because they were chasing a lot. And they got a ton of shots on net, and they tried a ton of shots on net. And Henrik Lundqvist was always there. Like, the only goal he allowed, he tried to sweep a puck away, bouncing off Max Pacioretty. Otherwise, any kind of shot didn't beat him. And what P.K. Subban said after the game is really interesting, because P.K. is, to me, the most interesting guy to talk to in this whole playoffs. He really thinks that if they get a little luckier, they're going to win some games this series, whether or not Carey Price is in net or not. And I can't say I totally, totally disagree with them, because watching that game again, they had so many chances over and over. And Lundqvist is great, and this is why you pay him. This is why you pay great goalies, is because they can do this. But in the playoffs, if you look at how many goals are clean and how many goals are deflected goals, what Montreal needs are better deflections. They need to get Lundqvist moving. They need the pucks to bounce the right way. And if they get a few of those, then games can change. And, in fact, game one could have changed too. But they haven't gotten them, and Lundqvist is better. And without Carey Price, what happens for the Canadians is their margin of error is all of a sudden right down to one bad play. And last night, there was the one bad play that made it a 2-1 game, one bad penalty call, and the game's over, all because of Henrik Lundqvist.
Bruce Arthur joins us. If you're the Montreal Canadiens, and I did read your piece about P.K. Subban's quotes, and I, you know what, he's a confident guy, and I can see his point of view. However, it's a lot easier to say we're going to beat Henrik Lundqvist than actually doing it. And if you're the Canadiens, do you try to have a different approach? Like Subban, I don't know, what do you have, 15 shots directed on goal last night, which is great for
18,
a defenseman,
actually, yeah.
18. Do they need more shots from in close rather than try to beat through screens? Or is the only way they're going to beat Lundqvist is by getting traffic and firing away from the points?
I think it's an all-you-can-eat buffet. I think you can try everything you can, because at this point in the playoffs, the whole notion of shot-based analytics, that whole thing, I always find it actually plays out well in some ways in the playoffs and some ways not. Like the Canadiens threw more than 80 shots at the goal last night, and none of them got the right kind of deflection. I don't think you can try one thing against these guys. I think you take everything you can. I think you throw everything you can at these guys. Because one thing Brendan Gallagher said after the game, he said that Lundqvist is so good that you start thinking, geez, I got to pick the corner against this guy. I got to put it exactly into a mail slot against this guy. And I think Carey Price does the same thing to people. I mean, if you notice that Boston hit 13 or 14 posts in the series against Montreal, I think it was partly because Carey Price is really good, and they tried to really pick the edges. And this is what happens with great goalies, is they can get it, climb inside shooters' heads. And so what Gallagher said is, you know, we just got to throw everything we can at them. Just throw everything you can. Because all Montreal could do in this game was control their discipline and control how as much of the play as they could. And they did a pretty good job of that. They screwed up a couple times on the discipline. Subban had one of those, just one of the dumbest penalties you'll ever see, a punch to the face with the referee right there, so close that he almost punched the referee. But they all they can do is control what they can control, and that's playoff hockey, is you control all the things you can control, and you hope that you don't get beaten by a bounce. You hope that you're better enough than the other team that a bounce doesn't beat you. And, again, the problem is this Tokarski kid, he wasn't terrible. He was a little shaky at times, and the second goal, I think he admitted he wanted back. But he wasn't the reason they lost. The reason they lost is they couldn't beat the other guy. So you just keep trying. You try stuff from the point. You try traffic in front. You try crashing the net. You try going side to side. You try drawing penalties so you can create something that way. And Montreal, in game one and in game two, had power plays when the game was within one goal and couldn't deliver. Partly because New York has figured out something that Boston didn't, which is if you get out at PK Subban at the point, it takes away a lot of Montreal's power play. But they just need to deliver. That's really all it is. They played a great game, too, in a lot of different ways. The problem they're going to have is we're two games in. We're going to New York. There's going to be two games in 6 days, and it feels like the series is more than half over.
Bruce Arthur from TSN and the Toronto Star joins us. Bruce, looking at the Canadians, Thomas Vanek, he was getting ripped apart by his effort or lacking of his effort last night. Do you think there's any chance he re-signs in Montreal?
I kind of doubt it, and I kind of doubted it when they traded for him. Everyone said this guy's labeled for Minnesota. But last night, I started to wonder, actually, if Thomas Vanek was hurt. Because PK threw 18 shots on that, nine of them got through. Thomas Vanek, who is a shooter, who is a scorer, is a guy, he took two shots last night. He passed, and he passed, and he passed, and he overpassed. He passed on a partial breakaway. And he was maddeningly passive. And that does happen with him sometimes. He is a guy who sometimes will disappear for a while. But he is a goal scorer. And right now, something is keeping him from shooting the puck. And I wonder, there was a times last night where you kind of saw he might be favoring his arm a little bit on the bench. I wonder if something's wrong, because that's the one thing in the playoffs. We kill these guys during the playoffs, right, when they don't deliver. We quite often will say, this guy can't do it in the playoffs, da-da-da-da-da. And then at the end of the playoffs, we find out what's really going on. If nothing's going on with Thomas Vanek, then last night was a maddeningly strange performance. It was like Kobe Bryant refusing to shoot in one of those games where he decided to prove a point. But I have to think that something's wrong with Vanek. That being said, I think he fits in reasonably well with this team. And the Canadians need high-end scores. I mean, you can't just live and die on Max Pacioretty up front. But he's going to get paid a lot of money. Even though this playoff run has not been – he's not covered himself in glory, Thomas Vanek's going to get paid. And I would be surprised if Montreal was the team paying him.
Bruce, do you think it matters who wins the Eastern Conference Final? Can the Rangers or the Habs beat the Kings or the Hawks?
Yeah, see, I've wondered that. And that's a really good point. You look at the Rangers, they played a Philly team without their starting goalie for three out of the seven games. They played a Pittsburgh team with Marc-Andre Fleury in net and really some internal problems clearly on the Penguins. And now they're playing Montreal without Carey Price. So they have not had the toughest run to this point. And I agree. I think Chicago and L.A. are two monster teams. I think they're going to beat each other up, but I think they're monster teams. The one thing I will say is this. I think Henrik Lundqvist is the best goalie left in the playoffs until Carey Price comes back. And as you can talk about Jonathan Quick all you want, but right now L.A. of the four teams has the worst save percentage numbers of any of the four teams left in the playoffs. I think that Henrik Lundqvist can win you a game, a two games, and maybe more. He's one of the few guys in the games who can steal you a series. And I think they'd have a shot. They are an outstanding possession team. They do have some big guns up front. I would worry about the depth of the defense and stuff like that. But New York looks good to me right now. Not great, but good. I'd give them a puncher's chance. That being said, if you ask me who I was going to bet on between New York and Chicago or L.A., yeah, it's not going to be New York.
And you know what? The interesting thing about goaltenders is Corey Crawford seems to get no respect. His save percentage is basically the same as Lundqvist, 933 to 934. He's played three or few games, but he's only faced 49 fewer shots than Lundqvist in three less games, right? It's kind of amazing how – and Crawford, I know, is on a great team, and maybe he hasn't played in the Olympics. He hasn't been that guy. But the more I watch Corey Crawford, the more I'm thinking, this guy might be one of the more underrated players or underappreciated players in the NHL.
he's one of those guys who gets hot. Like, the one thing with him is I don't trust him to be hot all the time, whereas Lundqvist is one of those guys. There's so few guys you can pencil in to be great every year, because goaltending is voodoo. It really is. Like, the number of guys you can depend on to be exactly what they are or to be really, really good every year is so small. And Lundqvist is on that list, and Crawford, I don't quite put there yet. But you are right. He's had great stretches in the past. When they won the last Stanley Cup, he was really good. He was the equal of anybody he went up against. So it comes down to a matter of trust. But that was one of the questions with Chicago this year, is that the goaltending during the regular season wasn't that great. And they had moments where, as a team, they seemed like their purpose ebbed a little bit. But they're the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Like, they're the most skilled team left in these playoffs. And in front of Corey Crawford, it's helpful to have as many skilled guys as they have. That being said, L.A. is a wonderful puck possession team, one of the great puck possession teams. And we're going to find out a lot about Corey Crawford as the series goes on. I can't remember which King it was, said the other day, what this team does, what the Kings do, is they find cracks. They don't find them in game one, but they find them in game two, game three, and then they start pressing on those cracks. And they press, and they press, and they press, and they press, and eventually the other guys go. I think we're with the Chicago-LA series a long way from over, and Corey Crawford's going to have to be great for Chicago to get out of there.
I would agree. The Kings are a team that maybe people don't like them that much because they think they're big, prodding, heavy style, but 3 years in a row in the Western Conference Final, and this series is far from over. I see the West one going seven, and that might be the advantage the Rangers get, because I'm not sure the Habs can win more than one game.
Well, and remember, during the modern era, no team that played went the full seven games in the first two rounds has made the Stanley Cup final. Now, the Rangers would be the first. The Kings could be the second.
Yeah.
And the difference is, if the Kings have to go 7-3 straight series and you put them in a Stanley Cup final, how beat up are they going to be, really? Because when they won the Stanley Cup, I remember someone on that team saying that he hadn't seen a needle the whole playoffs in that dressing room. Like, they were as healthy as they could be. But this Kings team, if they go through 21 games on the way to the final, that could be a huge leveling point if the Rangers can get this done quickly against the Canadiens. And that's one thing with this Habs series. I don't think it's over. I think the Habs can get it back to Montreal and maybe more, but they're going to have to be lucky. And you really don't want to bank on that. And there are a lot of people who are covering the series, and I'm going to be back on it as a Thursday. I'm going to be back in New York. There are a lot of people in the series felt like this might have been Montreal's best shot in game two. And if it was, the Rangers are going to go into the final a little more rested, maybe a lot more rested than anyone coming out of the West.
Bruce, I have to ask you this, because here in Edmonton, Oilers fans are salivating over the potential somehow to maybe get a top pairing defenseman. Dion Phaneuf, realistically, what are the chances Toronto trades him? And if they do, what would they be looking for in return?
I think it's possible. I think it's on the table. With the right offer, you can go get Dion Phaneuf. What they get back, I don't know the parameters of that yet. But what you're getting if you get Dion at this point is a complicated story. I really do believe that. He can play 25 minutes a night. There's not a lot of guys who can do that. I'm just not. If he's your number one guy, then I think you do have problems unless the rest of your defense has a lot of twos and threes, which Toronto doesn't. In Edmonton's situation, having a guy who you can throw out there for 25 minutes a night, I think, is really helpful. But some of the other guys are going to have to go around him, and he's not an elite defenseman. He's not a stud. He's not Duncan Keith. You know what I mean? He is probably a B to B minus level defenseman, I think. And there are advanced stats guys who swear to me up and down that the underlying stats on Dion Phaneuf are horrifying. And I do take that into account. He can't save you. He can be a piece of a good puzzle. But ideally, if you want to be a cup contending team, and I know in Edmonton, that's not what you're looking for this second. But if you want a cup contending team, I think Dion Phaneuf is better on your second pair. And if you can get that, if you have a good enough defense core to put him on your second pair and play 20 minutes a game instead of 25, then yeah, 100%, go get that guy. Otherwise, the reason Toronto signed him is they didn't have anyone better. They didn't have any other options. They felt like if they're going to move him eventually, you better have him under contract. So the Toronto Maple Leafs have defensive problems, and they're willing to move Dion Phaneuf. You have to think a little bit about why that would be.
Yeah, there are very few defense corps, I guess St. Louis maybe, with Petrangelo and Bouwmeester in Chicago. Yeah. Like, there are very few where he would be a number three, though.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him on a second pair in Boston, right? Like, because Chara and Seidenberg, you can put them back together, and then you could put Phaneuf as a really strong second pair guy. But that to me is the issue, is that if he's your number one guy and there's a drop-off to number two, then you're in trouble. And if you have him with a really solid defensive-minded second guy, you can make it work. Again, he still is a flawed player, But if you, there are ways to minimize his flaws. I think it's probably the best way to put it.
And lastly, Bruce, I know you're a big fan of the CFL like I am. You hearing anything? I've done a little digging around. I see maybe a short delay to the opening of training camp because usually when push comes to shove and there's an actual strike, that's finally when people get down to business. But I don't see this lasting very much longer. Do you?
Yeah, and I haven't had time to really dig into it, but my sense of this has always been this. Neither side can afford any kind of crippling job stoppage. Because it's not, on the one hand, with the league, times are good enough that there's no teams that are going to fold if they don't get a season started on time. But CFL players, I mean, you want to talk about it, no leveraging. Like, they have no leverage. And there's enough money out there. There's enough out there to come to a deal. So I really think that at this point, this is posturing. CFL really won in the last CBA when they detached salary cap from revenue, so it wasn't linked anymore. Now, they're just going to have to pay a certain amount, and it's how hard-line the players are willing to be. But I can't see this going long. I can barely see this delaying the season, just because as much as these are the solid days, still the CFL. Neither side, I think, can afford anything really bad.
No, I would agree with you on that one. Bruce, great to talk to you. We'll do it again soon. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely my pleasure, Jason.